Hello, listeners. It's your host, Dacia. The episode you're about to hear is all about Rachel Barton Pine's new album, Blues Dialogues, and her foundation's project, Music by Black Composers. And this is something that Rachel's been working on for years, and it extends way beyond just an album. We're releasing this episode, by the way, at the beginning of Black History Month. And I just have to pause for a second to say that while it kind of makes sense to release this episode now, it also makes me just a little personally uncomfortable. Like, relegating recognition of Black composers to the month of February, it should just be happening in all of the months. But that's what months like this are about. They're about shining light upon those who deserve it, but who, because we don't live in a perfect world, like, they don't always get it. And in fact, that's what Rachel's project is all about too, bringing attention to the work of composers of African descent who don't get played on our concert stages. Here's hoping that Rachel's project and others like it will help make a world where we don't need Black History Month, because that will just be a year-round thing. And this will just be February. And now, a word from our sponsor. So you guys hear these Maestro Classics promos every week, and they're actually a really interesting label. It was created in 2004 by Stephen Simon, the conductor of the Washington Chamber Symphony, and executive director Bonnie Simon. They had these programs aimed at introducing classical music to families, and they would play it to sellout crowds at the Kennedy Center and all of this critical acclaim. And the label Maestro Classics was created to record and share these narrator plus orchestra performances. They're recorded at Abbey Road Studios with the London Phil, and honestly, it's some of the best music for kids out there. Learn more about Maestro Classics at maestroclassics.com. And now on with the show. There's a rumor going around that classical music can be hoity-toity. But here in the classical classroom, we beg to differ.
Beethoven 5.
The idea that classical music is a zone where we have to feel restricted or we have to act in a certain way, you know, that's not going to be helpful going forward.
Isaiah is shaking with excitement.
I mean, there's just so many great parts of the opera.
He asked me to play his favorite spot in the first movement of the Brahms. And then he said, I started using those licks in my guitar solos.
How to be classical music rock stars, because there's not enough of that in this business.
Occasionally, I would plug in the mandolin to my distortion pedals.
I don't change my voice.
And talking to classical
voice. I'm playing classical music now. I mean, it's the same 12 notes. That's what's so cool about it.
I'm Dacia Clay, a classical music newbie, and I'm trying to learn all I can about the music. Come learn with me and the classical music experts I invite into the classical classroom. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Classical Classroom. I'm Dacia Clay, and here with me today is violinist Rachel Barton Pine. Rachel is basically a veteran guest on the Classical Classroom at this point, because the woman never stops. She's basically a juggernaut of creativity. She's always got something new to talk about, and we're always glad to have her. She's a world-renowned performer, having performed with basically all of the major orchestras, as well as with her metal band Earth and Grave. Today, she's here to talk about her latest album, Blues Dialogues, Music by Black Composers. Rachel, welcome back.
Always great to talk to you, Dacia.
Can you talk about some of the pieces on this album? It's called Blues Dialogues. And what's going on there? Because, you know, most of us know you for your work with Earth and Grave. Just kidding. Most of us know you for your work with classical music. So what's up with the blues crossover?
Well, this isn't crossover. This is straight up classical music, every single track. And it just happens to be that these particular pieces of art music use blues as a building block. You know, so much classical music has other types of folk music or traditional music or other styles, and whether you're thinking about, you know, Leonard Bernstein writing things with a jazz influence, or Bartok with a Hungarian folk music influence. So it's classical music inspired by the blues, a dialogue between blues and classical. But it's all composed music. There's no improv. But certainly the fact that I do play straight up blues and have jammed with blues bands and, you know, can just do that whole improv thing definitely helped my understanding of how to effectively interpret this music, because I could bring those same kinds of inflections and timing and the special sorts of slides and bent notes that you need to do to bring out that blues flavor. The first first one I ever discovered of this set of pieces was the David Baker Deliver My Soul. I was in my favorite sheet music shop when I was a kid. You know, some teenagers would go to the mall and buy clothes, and I would go to my favorite sheet music store and charge way too much on my credit card and come home with a stack of music. And so I found this piece one day, and it was, you know, 12. It wasn't like, you know, the Ravel Sonata with its blues movement. You know, that's much more like kind of jazz. But this was straight up 12-bar blues made into a recital piece for violin and piano. And I was like, what? So I was so excited. I've performed it numerous times. Actually, I have a YouTube video of me playing it from I think, 10 years ago or something. And that's been a constant in my repertoire.
I like that a lot. Will you just describe the scope of your project? Because, I mean, this has been, it's been many years in the making, for one thing. And this seems like just a beginning, since it's called Volume 1.
Exactly.
But, yeah, talk about the full scope of it.
Yeah, so thanks for asking. So we have a whole series planned for violin, and then we're going to do other solo instruments. We're going to have music for school orchestra. It all started with my 97 album, Violin Concertos by Black Composers of the 18th and 19th Centuries. These were Afro-Caribbean and Afro-European composers from the time of Mozart and Brahms. Absolutely beautiful music that was very much unknown. And after that album came out, I started getting requests from students, parents, and teachers asking, you know, where can I find some of this music for my kid? And unfortunately, a lot of it is just not accessible and not available. It's in manuscript only and has never been published, or it's been long out of print, you know, another element of discrimination and, you know, just lack of opportunity historically. So I had started my RBP Foundation for the purpose of young artist support with our instrument loan program and financial assistance for young artists. And I suddenly realized, wait a sec, I have a not-for-profit and I love music research and I'm very passionate about music education. So this would be a perfect project for me to do because somebody needs to do it. And so now it's been 15 years. We've collected more than 900 pieces by more than 350 composers, men and women from Africa, Europe, North America, South America, the Caribbean, even a couple from Oceania and Asia. We already, on our musicbyblackcomposers.org website, have a living composers directory where people can find music or choose composers that they might want to commission. There are more than 170 composers on that list, and you can sort them by gender, by geographic region, by year of birth. So if you're looking for a young woman from Europe of African descent, you can find her, or multiple of her. You know, it's just an amazing resource that I was, you know, so happy to be able to launch. And then we have reading lists and for more information about composers and so on. One of the things that we haven't launched yet but we're working on is a database for professional performers, which will have solo music, chamber music, orchestral music, basically tell you what exists and where to find it. Because that's some of the barriers. People say, I want to play, you know, some music by Black composers, but what is there? What pieces have been written and where do I get it and so forth? So we're trying to, you know, make things that much more easily accessible by having all of this information right at your fingertips.
We'll talk about some of the pieces on the album. Like, what are some of the ones that come to mind? I won't ask you to pick your favorite because that's not fair.
Yeah, well, so of course, there's two women composers, Dolores White, whose blues dialogues inspired the album title, and she kind of marries elements of Bartok and Stravinsky with this idea of the blues. And then Errolyn Wallen. See, we can't call this album African American Composers because of Errolyn Wallen. She was born in Belize and lives in the UK. But her music is, you know, very funky, and this particular piece is kind of a distillation or a deconstruction of woogie boogie or boogie woogie style. She calls it woogie boogie, which is very cute.
Sure.
Charles Brown's Song Without Words almost didn't make it onto the album. It was kind of a last-minute addition because I definitely wanted only pieces that were classical compositions written for the violin. So, you know, the Charles Brown was, of course, a vocal piece, but there's a long tradition of violinists playing Songs Without Words by Mendelssohn, Dvorak, the Rachmaninoff vocalise. And so I realized that this piece would be really beautiful on the violin. And it's actually different than a lot of Songs Without Words because it's actually meant to be hummed. And you can see some YouTube videos of some, you know, very compelling performances by vocal artists humming this song. So I actually started my preparation for it by humming it rather than playing it. The kind of this kind of thing to really get the inflections, the timing, figure out how I wanted to phrase it. And then I picked up the violin and used a kind of sliding technique to imitate that sound to bring the music to life. Coleridge Taylor Perkinson, his Louisiana Blues Strut, has become a real favorite. I frequently play it as an encore after concertos, and it's, you know, it's for unaccompanied violin, and it's not what audiences expect. It's just a real wild ride. William Grant Still Sweet is probably the one, you know, repertoire piece on the album. Certainly people perform it a fair amount. I had actually previously recorded the middle movement of the William Grant Still Sweet, which is titled Mother and Child, on my Lullabies album. And it's interesting to sort of approach it now as the mother of a, you know, just turned 7-year-old, as opposed to, you know, back when I had a nursing baby.
Yeah.
There's even a new piece on the album written for me, the Billy Childs incident, which is about the Philando Castile shooting. And of course, there's a long tradition in the blues of, you know, protest music. And, you know, and I just recently attended a Ricardo Muti from conducting Chicago Symphony doing Bobby Yar. And, you know, I think of this piece by Billy Childs as very much in the same vein of, you know, drawing attention to human atrocity in an effort to, you know, kind of work through it and hopefully end up with a better world.
We have a kick-ass website. Fact, it's at classicalclassroomshow.com. Fact, you can find all of our episodes there, including all zillion other Rachel Barton Pine episodes, all of which we love. You can download free lesson plans that go along with our episodes. You can just scroll over the photos and watch the pink headphones appear. It's mesmerizing. And don't forget, there's now a tip jar where you can make a one-time or recurring gift, and I'll sing to you in an episode. There's just a wee little button that says tip jar up in the corner. By the way, our friends at New Y made our beloved website, and they can make a website for you to love, too. They can also help you promote it and your business. For more information about New Y, go to classicalclassroomshow.com/NW. That's N as in new and W as in Y. And now back to my conversation with Rachel Barton Pine. So I want to talk about why it is that you feel that it's important to talk about the music of Black composers, because, I mean, in this day and age, aren't they just, you know, composers? Like, why the need to shine the light on them?
Well, actually, you're absolutely right. I do hope that, you know, if our work is successful, it will literally become obsolete and unnecessary. But we aren't at that point yet. A lot of these composers, you know, are not in the canon, not because they aren't just as deserving, but because they've been historically overlooked. And so you need to highlight them now to sort of right the ship.
Mm.
Clarence Cameron White, that's the oldest piece on the album, he was a virtuoso violinist of 100 years ago. And yet, because of discrimination at the time, he didn't have the performance opportunities that he deserved. You know, he wasn't being booked by mainstream concert series. Luckily, there were a fair number of African-American classical music organizations that presented concerts for just that reason. But he, you know, didn't have a lot of orchestras to solo with, et cetera. So, unfortunately, he didn't make any recordings, which is just, you know, criminal that we don't have that record of him. But we do have a snapshot of his artistry through his compositions. And interestingly, many of his compositions were performed and recorded by guys like Kreisler and Heifetz. In fact, Yasha Heifetz recorded this Clarence Cameron White piece that's on my album.
So you've been on diversity panels. You're actually a member of the Chicago Music Association, which was originally founded as a first branch of the National Association of Negro Musicians.
Yep, I'm on the board of Sphinx and the board of the Chicago Symphony's African American Network.
So you're very deeply involved. But there's this unavoidable fact, Rachel, and they may not have found this out yet, but you're a white lady.
Well, you know.
what's it like to be an advocate? I mean, you are an advocate, but you're also a collaborator for a group that you're not naturally a part of. Like, what has that experience been like?
Yeah, I mean, the first thing that I ever think of when describing myself before saying I'm a woman or a redhead or, you know, someone who's on the shorter side height-wise, any other way I might describe myself, you know, I always say I'm a classical musician, and that's what it's all about. I really, I believe in, you know, just good music getting heard and played, whether it was, you know, my old album of the obscure original violin works of Franz Liszt. Of course, everybody's heard of Liszt, but they hadn't heard of his violin music. You know, some of the Scottish music or the Clement Concerto and the Joachim Concerto that I, you know, made these recordings of. And, you know, those are white guys, but I was championing them too. So I guess, you know, this is just one slice of the music that I try to shine a light on. I think, you know, like on the one hand, you know, I'm a musician with a certain amount of success or notoriety, and so, you know, that's, you know, very meaningful that I would be championing, you know, or somebody in my position would be championing this music. And now there are more and more up-and-coming young soloists of color who are going to, you know, or already do have fabulous careers. You know, Daniel Bernard Romain, you know, a dear friend, and his Filter is a piece that actually has a Jimi Hendrix kind of approach to the blues, this wild cadenza. And then during the main part of the piece, he's actually imitating on the acoustic violin some of the distorted sound effects that you would get with a plugged-in electric violin.
What you're doing seems really important in that way, and that you're saying that it's not It's sort of about, I think, representation. You know, when you don't see yourself in a particular genre of music or in anything that's out there, you know, you're like, well, that, I guess that music isn't for me. And you just don't go there. Why would you? Nobody there looks like you. Much like the history of women composers, it's not that they weren't there. It's that they weren't being given
recognition,
the platform,
yeah, exactly.
And the recognition. And so you're now bringing that into light. That's
exactly
awesome.
And you know, the best thing is when men play works by women composers, because then that's like, you know, an endorsement in a different way. That's very important. But it's also about access to classical, and I believe mm-hmm. that everyone, you know, benefits from having classical in their lives and deserves to be part of classical. And in the case of African American children, what's been really heartbreaking is to hear that sometimes they feel like classical is somebody else's music. And, yeah. you know, as someone who's just, really passionate about education, I wanted to show, because it's like, I come from Chicago where we have the Center for Black Music Research and just so many resources. It's like, I know mm-hmm. that Frederick Douglass played the violin, that Coretta Scott King played the violin, that there were all Black orchestras in the 1800s and all these composers, but the average kid in the average town and their teacher, they don't know any of this stuff. And so they don't realize right. that this is their music too. And so in order to diversify, you know, which is so important to all of us, to have all of us represented, you know, and having inclusion in our genre, in order for people to really participate in the next generation, we have to educate them now. And part of educating them is providing relevant materials. And so this is, you know, where we come in.
Yeah.
The Noel da Costa Suite. He was born in Nigeria to parents of Jamaican descent and spent a large part of his career in the U.S., so he's alternately claimed as an African, an African-American, or a Caribbean composer. Take your pick. But this really is a great example of some of the barriers that exist. I had collected this piece more than a decade ago, and it had been sitting in my library, you know, just kind of on my wish list, but I couldn't play it because it was in manuscript and the handwriting was kind of scribbly and the piece was so complex that I just couldn't, you know, practice it off the music stand with this manuscript. And so finally I was able to get it entered into the computer and engraved. And I could tell that it was really cool, which is why I really wanted to play it. But after I was finally able to start practicing it, it turned out to be even better than I had predicted. And it's just such a good piece.
Again, like you said, it's all about access, and it can be such a deterrent when you want to do something. You're like, yes, I would love to include this music, but you literally don't know where to find it. So this is called Volume 1, and I'm guessing you've got plans for more volumes in the future?
Oh, absolutely. We're already almost done with Volume 2, and we're going to go. Basically, the idea is not to have a replacement curriculum, right? So it's very important to have our shared heritage where we all play Bach and Vivaldi and Mozart, et cetera. But, there's no reason why that should be the only music that we play. And so this is designed as a supplemental curriculum, not to teach you how to play the violin, but to have graded repertoire that you can play at every step of the way. Mm. So the first volume is beginner to elementary level, and we're going to go all the way up to advanced.
Wow.
It's amazing because, I release books and CDs and new concerts and do all this stuff all the time. But there's just the feeling when I was holding this violin Volume 1 in my hand, having worked on it for 15 years, there's mm-hmm. like no adjective in the English language to describe the emotion that I felt.
I bet. I can't imagine that, working on a project for that long and then being like releasing it into the world. That's amazing.
It's been interesting to think about these things because, you know, there's certainly the concept of cultural appropriation when it comes to, for example, pop music, and one has to, you know, tread carefully. But classical, I think, is really in a different world in that sense. You know, like when I'm playing Scandinavian music, you know, it certainly is, you know, the onus is on me to understand it to the best degree possible. But nobody minds that I'm, you know, didn't grow up Scandinavian before I went and dared to play the Sibelius concerto, you know, and yeah. Of course we're playing music from previous centuries that none of us lived in because it was so long ago. And we're, you know, everything we do, we're trying to interpret with the appropriate yeah. musical language, whether it's music from the past or the present or music of whatever genre or from whatever population it might be. And so
yeah.
I think it actually gives a certain legitimacy to this repertoire that, you know, other people would play it, that it's music that deserves to be played by everyone and not some kind of niche thing where only people of color would play composers of color, if that makes sense. And, you know, my greatest hope for this music is that it will be embraced, you know, by colleagues of all races and ethnicities, and that, you know, it'll just become part of our hashtag is expand the canon.
That is, wow. There's so much going on this album. This is very cool, and Rachel, I'm really glad that you're doing this because I think that that bringing more people that have been composing over time and just haven't been, who've basically been left out of the canon, bringing them into the canon, it can't do anything but make it better.
Yeah.
So, Rachel Barton Pine, it is always a pleasure to talk to you. You're, of course, welcome to come back any old time. Thanks for talking with me today.
Thanks for having me on, as always. Look forward to the next one.
Yeah. Okay, that does it for this episode. If you want to hear more episodes, just go to our website at classicalclassroomshow.com and listen till your heart's content. Follow us on all of the social media platforms or just send us an email at classicalclassroomshow@gmail.com. And now, listeners, a very special segment of the podcast that we like to call our Heroes section. Yes, these are listeners who have gone online and have given a financial gift to the program. You too can be thanked in song in an episode of the podcast, though it occurs to me as I say that perhaps that would be a deterrent for some of you. And if that's the case, I just want you to know, my silence can be bought. Anyhow.
Did you ever know that you're a hero?
We'd like to give a big thanks to Jan and Dave, who just became recurring donors to the show. That's right, every month we'll get a little gift. Steve Lazarus, we want to give you a big thank you too. Thanks, Steve.
You are the wind beneath our podcast wings.
Thanks today to the home of Classical Classroom, King FM in Seattle, where I got the best birthday card today with the ladies from Broad City on it. Thanks to our birthplace, Houston Public Media. Thanks to the official marmot of Classical Classroom, Punxsutawney Phil, for sharing Groundhog's Day with me. Thanks to Rachel Barton Pine for being on the show. Thanks to me for saying words. But most of all, thanks to you for listening. We'll catch you next time.